Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Micah chapter 3, which I will entitle Rulers and False Prophets Denounced. Micah is preaching against both the northern kingdom of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, and he's also preaching against Jerusalem, Judah, the southern 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin. His time of prophesying was between 740 and 687 B.C. 722 is when the northern 10 tribes went down to Assyria. 586 is when the Babylonians came and got the southern 2 tribes. So that orients us in time. We start now in verses 1 through 5. Then I, this is Micah speaking, then I said, "Now listen, leaders of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel. Aren't you supposed to know what is just? You hate good and love evil. You tear off people's skin and strip their flesh from their bones. You eat the flesh of my people after you strip their skin from them and break their bones. You chop them up like flesh for the cooking pot, like meat in a cauldron. Then they will cry out to the Lord, but he will not answer them. He will hide his face from them at that time, the they there is the leaders of Jacob, the leaders of the northern 10 tribes of Jerusalem, or perhaps the whole nation of Israel, it's not really clear. But the leaders of Israel will cry out to the Lord, but he will not answer them. He will hide his face from them at that time because of the crimes they have committed. This is what the Lord says concerning the prophets who lead my people astray, who proclaim peace when they have food to sink their teeth into, but declare war against the one who puts nothing in their mouths." Now, one nice thing about this chapter, in contrast to the first 2 chapters, this chapter is easy. It's a lot of very colorful language, a lot of hellfire and damnation language against the leaders of Israel. Now, in verse 1, Micah speaks to the leaders of Jacob. Jacob, of course, is the typical name for the northern 10 tribes. And Jacob here is in contrast, in parallel to, I should say, the rulers of the house of Israel. Jacob and Israel were 2 names for the same patriarch. He was named Jacob when he was first born as a deceiver of his brother Esau, and then he was named Israel when he grew up and ended up wrestling with Jehovah, wrestling with Yahweh, at the Jabbok River. And so those 2 names are used for the northern 10 tribes. But sometimes it's used for the whole nation of Israel too. And later on in this chapter, Jerusalem is going to be mentioned, so I'm just going to assume it's all of Israel that Micah is concerned with. But right here, the emphasis is probably on northern Israel. Now, these rulers are tearing off people's skin and their flesh. They're cannibals. They eat the flesh of my people after they strip the skin off. The rulers chop the people up like flesh for the cooking pot. They're cannibals. Verse 4, then they will cry out to the Lord, but he will not answer them because God doesn't answer cannibals. Then Yahweh will hide his face from them because of the crimes they have committed. These prophets, he's moving now from the leaders to the prophets, the political rulers, down to the spiritual leaders, the prophets in verse 5. They lead the people astray. They proclaim peace when they have food to sink their feet, to sink their teeth into. But then they declare war against people who are starving, who have nothing to put in their mouths. Now, this war here, in some translations, is translated as holy war. The prophets declare holy war against the people who are starving with nothing to put in their mouths. Other translations there, the NASB says holy war. The Darby note says literally hallow. The word there means hallow. The word right before war means hallow. So that would be holy war. God's Word translation says holy war. But the ASV, the KJV, the Holman Christian Study Bible, the NAB, and the Young's Literal Translation all translated as war. They just leave holy off. I don't know why. But notice the irony there. It's bad enough to declare an unjust war against the righteous people, but it's even worse to declare an unjust holy war in the name of God. So I like holy war. That's a good translation. I don't know if it's a good translation, but there's enough people who translate it that way to make it acceptable as a reasonable alternative, but I like the way it flows. Now, these prophets have food to sink their teeth into. Other people don't. The people they attack have nothing. This shows that the false prophets were interested in money. They were not interested in preaching the truth. We go now to Micah 3, verses 6 through 12, and we will finish this chapter. Therefore, Micah continues, it will be night for you. Again, he's talking to the rulers and the prophets. It will be night for you without visions. It will grow dark for you without divinations. In other words, not only physically can you not see, but also spiritually, you're not going to have any more revelation from God. The sun will set on these prophets, and the daylight will turn black over them. I might have just said that verse 6 is aimed at the rulers and the prophets. It's clear from the context. He's mainly aimed at the prophets now. Verse 7, then the seers, another word for prophets, then the seers will be ashamed and the diviners disappointed. They will all cover their mouths because there will be no answer from God. Now, what does this mean to cover their mouths? Literally, it reads the hair of their upper lip, their mustaches. Why would the false prophets cover their mustaches because there was no answer from God? Well, let's look at the symbolism. This is from Albert Barnes. First of all, lepers had to cover their mouths when they went through areas where people were. It was a symbol of uncleanness, therefore. It was also a symbol of mourning. We read in Ezekiel 24:17, groan quietly. Do not observe mourning rites for the dead. Put on your turban and strap your sandals on your feet. Do not cover your mustache or eat the bread of mourners. So mourners would cover their mustache. Again, the hair on their upper lip. Ezekiel 24:22, then you will do just as I have done. You will not cover your mustache or eat the bread of mourners. So basically, these false prophets who are no longer getting words from God, either they are unclean or feel that they're unclean, or they're mourning. It's probably the latter, I think. They're mourning because they're worthless. But in contrast to that, in verse 8, Micah says, as for me, however, I am filled with power by the Spirit of the Lord, with justice and courage, to proclaim to Jacob his rebellion and to Israel his sin. Listen to this, leaders of the house of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and pervert everything that is right, who build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with injustice. Now here we see Zion and Jerusalem mentioned. That's the southern kingdom, and Jacob and Israel mentioned all in the same breath. Jacob and Israel in verse 9, Zion and Jerusalem in verse 10, and that's why we see that Micah is aiming at the whole nation. I think that what he's doing in verse 9, he's referring to the northern 10 tribes when he mentions Jacob and Israel, that sort of standard. And then he adds in verse 10, Zion and Jerusalem. Zion, of course, is Mount Zion and Jerusalem, that long stretch of hill that runs from Mount Moriah down to the Valley of Hinnom. Zion is a common symbol. It stands for Jerusalem. Sometimes it just stands for the mountain itself, and sometimes the mountain itself plus Mount Moriah to its north, sometimes for the whole city of Jerusalem, sometimes for the whole nation of Judah, and sometimes for the whole 12 tribes, all of them. Just depends on the context. In the New Testament, it stands for the church. Here it stands for Jerusalem because it's in parallel with Jerusalem. These rulers build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with injustice. And of course, Jerusalem's the capital, so what they're saying is their nation is unjust because of these rulers. Verse 11, her leaders issue rulings for a bribe. So the court system is corrupted. Her priests teach for payment. The religious system is corrupted. And notice that her priests teach for payment. As someone who does not believe in paying clergy, creating hirelings so that the congregation can thus control the pastor of the church because his wife and children are held hostage to what he teaches. He can't say anything that might rebuke the adulterers, the fornicators in the church, whatever. He can't say anything that will offend anybody because he'll lose his source of income. It's a huge problem. Nobody seems to talk about it, though. I wish I'd have seen this verse earlier. Her priests teach for payment. That's exactly what evangelical pastors do today. They teach for payment. And this teaching for payment is in the context of horrible denunciations of immorality and sin. Now, of course, someone who might defend the practice of receiving payment for teaching to the flock will note that at the end of verse 11, Micah says, Jerusalem's prophets practice divination for money. And the people who defend such practice say the priests are teaching nonsense for money. Just like the prophets are practicing divination for money, they're prophesying nonsense for money. And so if you look at the context, the priests are teaching error for money, and we're not doing that. Okay, I'll give that to you. I still say, though, paying Christian pastors is a bad, bad mistake, in my humble opinion. Now, these leaders of Israel, north and south, they lean on the Lord, saying, isn't the Lord among us? No disaster will overtake us. Wrong. Verse 12, therefore, because of you, Zion will be plowed like a field, and Jerusalem will become ruins, and the hill of the Temple Mount will be a thicket. Now, when did this happen? When was Zion plowed like a field? Well, this is relatively easy to figure out. It was done by the Babylonians in 586. We know that because Jeremiah quoted Micah, and Jeremiah was prophesying right before 586 when the destruction from Babylon came down. We read in Jeremiah 26, verses 17 and 18, "Some of the elders of the land stood up and said to all the assembled people, 'Micah the Moreshite,'" that's our Micah, the one we're talking about now, Micah chapter 3, "'Micah the Moreshite prophesied in the days of Hezekiah, who ruled from 716 to 687, king of Judah, and said to all the people of Judah, this is what the Lord of hosts says, Zion will be plowed like a field, Jerusalem will become ruins.'" That's the exact words that Micah used, so Jeremiah quoted Micah straight on, "and the temple mount a forested hill, Jerusalem will become." So Jeremiah ties down the date for us. Adam Clark says that it can refer to the destruction of Jerusalem. I don't think so. I think it refers to 586, the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Here's what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. The Talmud and Maimonides, Maimonides is the famous medieval Jewish scholar, the Talmud and Maimonides record that the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans under Titus, that's AD 70, Terentius Rufus, who was left in command of the army with a plowshare, tore up the foundations of the temple. Well, maybe AD 70 is envisioned by Micah here. Who knows? I don't know, but I do know that Jerusalem was plowed like a field. And on that sad note, we are finished with Micah chapter 3, and we are prepared to go in our next chapter, Micah chapter 4, which I will call the Mountain of the Lord. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.